This is a presentation, little human interest, presentation that I was asked to do when visiting in China. As you know, this year was, as far as I know, the first annual International Yoga Day. You aware of that? All over the world, International Yoga Day. Well, I can report to you happily that in China, yoga is super popular. There's lots and lots and lots of yoga studios and people practicing yoga. And as was mentioned, most of the time, people do so for health reasons, exercise reasons kind of thing. So when visiting in Wuhan, China is a city that's one of the things it's famous for. There's two very ancient and huge monasteries, Buddhist monasteries. And there was an interest in, besides practice of yoga and interest in health in general, what's beyond good health. So that's the topic, beyond good health. The health industry in the West, it's not no longer just like some people interested in health. It's a huge industry. And there are ways of, there are aspects of it and ways of promoting it. And we'll just touch on some of those things. The slogan in the health industry is healthy is not a goal, it's a way of living, which is true. It's goal, be healthy. But to be healthy, lifestyle has to be carefully considered. So one of the essential elements of healthy lifestyle is eating. And in the health world, vegetarianism is very strongly recommended, if not like mandatory. And then there's a system of balancing the food types that you take. Like at Washington University in St. Louis, along with this weekly class that they also have a vegetarian cooking class and they have a yoga class. So that the vegetarian cooking class, they don't just teach how to cook, how to put this and that together in certain ways and make tasteful things. They explained in the course of that how this food combined with that food category combined with these spices and what they do for promoting health. It's a whole big subject. So eating healthy helps you to live healthy. So there's some tips that you can just see in the lower left corner about eating healthy. So the first one is, eat healthy food. So food groups, according to Bhagavad Gita, you heard at the beginning, messages from Bhagavad Gita will be spoken this evening. So this is, even in the healthy part, there's foods in goodness, passion, and ignorance, and foods that promote health, longevity, peaceful countenance, and so forth. These are generally in the vegetarian food group. So eat healthy food. Then, they consist of whole grains, fruits, vegetables, milk products, and things like that. Recommended is eat moderately. And eat at regular times of the day. That's a health item. In the course of the day, drink plenty of water. They even teach this in the army, I'm told. Irrigate, a certain volume of water daily. It helps health. And the food choices, you may have a liking for a particular type of food, but vary those food choices over time. And when you're making changes in your diet, Changes should be, it's recommended, make them gradually, not abruptly or radically. It helps maintain good health to do that. Then along with eating, right up there with eating is the necessity for exercise. This fellow quoted in the right-hand corner, Gene Tunney, is a big name in the health industry, and the right kind of exercise, and there's different types of exercise. You'll see a chart in just a moment. Doesn't matter your age or your condition. Student life is often sedentary, so make sure that for health purposes there's some amount of exercise, and stretching exercise, running exercise, biking exercise, and in case you didn't know, movement in water is said to be the best for a variety of reasons. One is all the muscle groups are moved. Another, it's aerobic, so it exercises the lungs and circulatory system at the same time. Then, because you're in water, the body is largely water, it helps the circulatory system in general. And another important item is when you run or some of those other kinds of exercises, you're hitting a hard surface, and it can, over a period of time, harm the body. Water doesn't do that. So it's top of the list of exercises. Here's a chart from the health industry folks. There are some things that recommended that you do every day, and then goes up the charts. We'll start at the bottom. Walking, real standard activity, walking every day. Some go out of your way to do some walking. One of the things that it shows, that what laser pointers don't work on the screen. Park your car farther away. I've seen people do that. I mean, I don't know if they do it consciously, but it seems like they do it consciously. When there's the door to go into something, they park way over there. They walk, and when you walk, walk swiftly. Just a little sharing. I mentioned that we were just observing over the weekend the 50th anniversary of our Hare Krishna movement's founder coming to the West when he was 70 years of age. One of the things that he did every day was he would walk for 1 hour. Busy, but he would walk for 1 hour. And the hour of the day that he went was 6 in the morning till 7 in the morning, early. And his stature was short. But although his stature was short, he moved swiftly. So those of us that are much taller than short, every third step was, we had to run just to keep up with him, because zoom, zoom. In the health industry, they even have this thing of, you know, so many miles per hour, it should be the speed if you're walking when you're walking. Specifically for the, of course, if you can walk immediately, that's also okay. But bodily movement, and then running up, going up a bit, 3 to 5 times a week, give your heart and lungs a workout. So here's some examples: biking, hiking, brisk walking, that's what I was just describing, aerobic movement of some kind. You move your body, and the heart has to beat a little faster, the lungs have to move a little faster, and give yourself a bit of a workout. Not too strenuous, but 3 to 5 times per week. Then 3 times per week. Stretching, Tai Chi, yoga, sitting at your desk, get up and stretch. I travel a lot, so it's one of the things they tell people to travel a lot. Don't just stay in one place the whole time. Get up and walk around. It's a little funny when you have to walk around the airplane because there's so many people in the airplane, but listen, you're supposed to do that. So I do that purposefully. Especially when you're in altitudes, because air pressure is different and the oxygen is different, and you can have health problems. So, you know, strong, stretching your and strengthening your muscles. And then, as this one mentioned already, try to cut down on the amount of time that you're just in one place. And our lifestyle keeps us often in one place. In school studying, or in work working, or whatever it is. So it's good to get up and move about. Minimize just staying in one place. And then, if you're inactive, then gradually work on some of these things in practical. Some people have no problem with this. I was at MIT yesterday when one gentleman came forward at the end saying, "I know what to do about the exercise part." We weren't talking about exercise. "I know what to do about the academic part, but there's a spiritual dimension to me, and I don't know what to do with that. Because I've been so focused on the academic part and then maintaining my health so I can do the academic part, but I feel this other dimension needs some very, very clear, very focused activity." For health, good rest is necessary. And one of the ideals in the health world, you've probably heard the phrase before, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. So the healthy part is rising early, and to do that you need to rest early, and then it helps promote health. It also promotes good rest. And one of their sayings is, sleep well, feel well. But if one has insomnia or a difficulty resting, guaranteed it's going to cause health issues. So get sufficient rest. And in the health industry, yoga is way up there in terms of what people look to for maintaining health and fitness. I just came across something the other day where the not just contact sport football. I have a brother-in-law who is a All-American football player. He was sharing with me, it's not just a contact sport. It's dangerous. So professional football players are looking to yoga because it can help reduce, you know, the risks in their profession. Along with yoga goes, well, meditation. In fact, I could spend a whole bunch of time describing this. But someone that I know that's a teacher of yoga teachers, who then teach yoga teachers, he's a very skilled practitioner of bhakti yoga and also the yoga system. And he was describing this this past summer. He was in London, and he was invited to a gathering of teachers of yoga teachers. And they were asking him to evaluate how they conduct their teaching of yoga teachers. So he says, he said, 10 minutes, I'll explain to you the principles that need to be there, whatever your particular system is. In short, he took me through the little session, and it's largely fixing the mind, because when you're doing yoga properly, you're concentrating the mind. It's one of the purposes. It's one of the attainments, and it's all, you know, to do it properly. I went through the exercise of time yoga. Do this and this. So you have to concentrate the mind to do all those things. So yoga and meditation, they blend. It's actually, if you read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, this yoga practice that goes into yoga schools, yoga studios, it's just one part. The asana, or sitting postures, is one part of a meditational yoga system that leads to it. So improves cognitive functions. You want to do better in your academic work through meditation. And improve your immune system. You want to make sure that cold winters and
Honestly, you don't get well, you don't get sick. The meditation. We have a nice meditation process, mantra meditation. There's some meditation process. It helps. It helps. Improves your mood, etc. It's an integral part of health and well-being. And then, you know, balance. Of course, easier said than done. You can train an elephant to stand on a beach ball, but it's hard to train a person to stay balanced. Because things pull on our lives from time to time or regularly, and so it's health. It's a feature found in Bhagavad Gita, a feature of the quality of goodness, is to be regulated in what you do. So, and then when you're regulated in what you're doing, you consider, you know, your week is a good unit of time to plan. And then it's broken into days, and there's weekdays and weekends, and how much time for this and how much time for that, and make sure there's enough balance so that you're not stressed out. And then you have a healthy lifestyle. So those are some of the standard recommendations for maintaining good health. And even after doing all that, sometimes there's health problems. And according to Bhagavad Gita's teaching, one of the things that happens with bodies is they get old, and there's a common saying, old age means old age, and then sometimes there's disease unexpectedly. I just received, anyway, we all go through these things. Just today, a very dear friend, his wife was just diagnosed as having a certain type of cancer. You know, wonderful person, but you know, it happens. Disease will come. And everybody has its expiration date. Death will also come. So even when we make efforts to maintain good health and balance and everything, the body is temporary, and so is there such a thing as having permanent health? Not so likely. So looking beyond the temporary nature of things, what lies beyond, that's our topic, beyond good health, is now comes lessons, further lessons from Bhagavad Gita, along with maintaining the quality of goodness, which many of these things of health-related are touched on in Bhagavad Gita. There's this going to a higher state of consciousness. This image here, nice painting, isn't it? This is Krishna. There's two personalities primarily in Bhagavad Gita. It's a dialogue between Krishna, who is a dear friend of Arjuna, and Arjuna is one of five brothers who were the rightful heirs of the kingdom, because the system was when the king, the firstborn son of the king, would become the next king, would become the heir to the throne. But then there were some cousins that they were trying to usurp the throne. They attempted murder and so many skullduggery, ugly things. Fast forward, it ended up in a war. And before the war was to begin, Arjuna asked Krishna to draw his chariot between the two armies so he could see who was arrayed. And when he saw what he saw, it was overwhelming for him. And basically, I can't go through with this. I want to leave the battlefield and not participate. And here's my reasons, and gave his reasons, and turned to Krishna and said, I don't know what my duty. I'm very confused. My mind is new. Please instruct me. And so the instructions that came right away went to the transcendental platform. And within that lesson of Bhagavad Gita, there's 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, this is from 13, it mentions these four things, Sanskrit terms, birth, death, disease, and old age. Old age and disease. So, birth. Living entity that gets a body has to go through this wonderful experience of birth. And then, in the course of time, it happens, even to the best of people, that there's some health problem. And to the best of people, old age comes. And when old age comes, things that used to work don't work the way they used to work. And it's problematic. Vision and memory and hearing and digestion and body parts and the machine breaks down. And then inevitable death, whatever the species of life may be. And it's not something you look forward to. But it happens. So beyond the temporary body trying for the condition of good health, there's two options. Stay within this. This is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, by the way. Transmigration of the soul as the soul continually passes from boyhood to youth to old age. That means, you know, the bodies are changing, but the spark of life within, the conscious self within, is remaining the same. That's unchanging, and the body is ever changing. Nice image that shows this. Nice man holding a picture of himself, holding a picture of himself, holding a picture of himself. Now, there's different bodies, but it's the same person. The person isn't changing, the bodies are changing. And so, in the final change, it's you go to another body. That's the teaching. And you go to the other body, and then that birth, old age, disease, and death cycle follows. And then there's so many species of life, depending upon the consciousness of the living entity. Material nature arranges a suitable body to match that consciousness. And then we behave accordingly. Going to spend a little bit of time, not too much. This is part of the presentation that I did in China, because when in presenting Bhagavad Gita's message in China, 100% of the time, people want to know, how does this relate to the teachings of Buddha, because it sounds similar. So what's similar, what's different? That's why this slide is here, and the next slide too. There's naturally similarities because they both come from the same subcontinent, although in time, the chronology of their presence was different, but you may be interested to know. Thousands of years before Buddha appeared, these ancient Vedic literatures foretold he would come. And then with some details like where, what his mother's name would be, what the village was, and where he would travel and what he would teach. And so, this is a Buddhist symbol representing the eightfold path of Gautama Buddha. I'm going to speak a little bit about him in the next slide. And even the symbolism is similar. This is a Vedic symbol of Om in the middle with a chakra on the outside, again, eight marked around the outside. Similar. Similar to what I was describing from Bhagavad Gita, here's a little bit of the life of Gautama Buddha, or sometimes called Siddhartha. He was born in Nepal, the son of a king, so he was a prince, he had royal privilege. And as a young man, still not of mature age yet, he was being taken on a royal conveyance cart, a chariot or something, to different parts of the royal city. And one day in the northern gate, he saw a very old person with old age leaning on a cane and walking very slowly and awkwardly and uncomfortably. And he could see that the person was having difficulty and there was some misery connected to his being in an old body. And he was feeling compassion for that infirmity of condition. Then another time at the Western Gate, he saw a man lying underneath a tree. His image is saying many things about the early part of his life. And he was diseased. And the particular disease he had, there were sores on his body. There were flies flying around the sores of his body. Because he was diseased, he was neglected. There was stool smeared on his body just from lying there and rolling on the ground. And he was moaning, groaning in pain from the suffering of his diseased condition. And he then reflected, when people aren't diseased, they're very busy trying to enjoy, not recognizing that like this, old age and disease is going to come, and you know, they're just buying themselves misery. There must be some other way to live one's life. Then at the Southern Gate another time, he saw a man that had just died. And relatives gathered around and wailing. And although it's inevitable, when death comes, it's very painful for the person and painful for those who are dear to that person. Then finally, on the Eastern Gate another time, he saw a monk. Now, it happened to be a Buddhist monk. He wasn't Gautama Buddha yet. His name when he was young was Siddhartha. But he saw a Buddhist monk. That means Buddha appeared before he did. And he saw the man dressed very simply and seeming to be very serene and calm and peaceful. And he was sitting under a tree meditating. By his side, he had a bowl for receiving alms. His life was very simple. He was very peaceful. So he decided, I want a life like that. I don't want a life like these other ones. So he went from Nepal to the place where Buddha had appeared, in Gaya, which is within India. And for 6 years, he sat under a tree and engaged in meditation, a bodhisattva tree, sometimes. And he became enlightened and gave certain teachings as those eightfold path of Buddhism. And essentially, the material world is full of sufferings, so he was interested in withdrawing from the material world and entering into some other condition of consciousness. A somewhat similar idea is described in another Vedic text, Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm going quickly here so we can reach the conclusion. Some of you are from India, so you know who Narada Muni is. Narada Muni was visiting a king, King Prachinivari. And King Prachinivari was too much. He was a very pious man, but too much attached to his opulence and his power and the fruits of his piety, which were abundant. So he was, in different ways, trying to help the king understand attachment to these temporary things may seem very nice, but it's problematic. So he gave this description of a male and female deer in a very serene park, with nice flowers and nice fragrances and enjoying together, very seemingly peaceful scene, unaware that approaching from the front, the tiger was coming and from behind was a hunter with a bow and arrow. So then he explained to the king, this is time, and time will destroy everything, however happy it may seem to be. And then there are obstacles or dangers in life that everyone has to face. So while trying to live your life in a peaceful, pleasant, or happy, enjoying manner, it's temporary, and there's danger, and it's suffering that it's guaranteed to come. Please consider what your alternatives are. And he offered the same alternative that's being described in Srimad Bhagavatam. By the way, here's the Chinese characters.
the rare human form of life, which, although temporary, affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. It's not a new idea, but specifically the Vedic wisdom is teaching us this human form of life has a purpose. Like when you get some electronic device, an iPad, an iPod, or this thing, that thing, the little operator's manual, how to use the thing. So Bhagavad Gita is like this, an operator's manual, how to use this human form of life. What did the designer design it for? What are the different things you can do to use it as it was intended? But as it was intended was higher consciousness of all the different forms of life, Bhagavad Gita teaches us, and the Vedas, this human form of life, although it's temporary, it gives us the opportunity, by design, to achieve the maximum potential of consciousness. That's the intended purpose. And that higher consciousness can certainly go along with whatever you do for your practical necessities of life and propensities of life and so forth. But don't neglect or forget that higher consciousness purpose. And to get to that stage requires a little inquisitiveness beyond the immediate and the temporary. That's essentially the starting point. There must be, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have this basic confidence. There's a reality beyond all the temporary things that are going on around us and that we're engaged in. There's a higher dimension, a higher purpose for life. And the inquisitiveness of what is that is like the example is given, striking a match. Because within a match, just say within a matchbox, a bunch of matches sitting on a shelf can sit there for a long time. But take the matchbox off the shelf, open the thing, take a match out, strike it across the striker, and the fire that's stored in the match comes out. Similarly, there's higher consciousness potential within this human form of life, and just exercise it. Take the match out of the matchbox and move it across the striker. The inquisitiveness is the higher function that leads to, can lead to, connecting our true self with the higher position of consciousness. So what's that true self? This is now Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. Really simple. That self is situated within the body, distinct from the body. The body is a covering, and that higher consciousness or higher self is within. Here's a little diagram to make it really simple. That's us. The spirit spark. And surrounding the spirit spark is the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then that subtle body is also encased or covered by a gross body. Earth, water, these five elements. That's the Vedic picture of gross elements, subtle elements, and then us. And the purpose of yoga is to engage this and engage that, to realize that. Align them properly to realize who we are. And then we can function using our intellect, using our mind, using our body and our senses in all types of ways that are practically without limit, but with higher consciousness. So that's the aspiration of beyond the good health message. So I like to finish with these little images. That's us. The eggshell and a little light creeping out into the darkness. There's something out there beyond the inside of this eggshell. And gradually as that expands, more light goes into that position of darkness, and gradually it can bring one to the position of the jewel-like radiance, which is the self, the conscious self, looking upon the body as that's a body that we may be within or can utilize for a higher purpose. Let us use that for realization of the self. From, again, those of you from India, you know what the Upanishads are. So this is from the Kena Upanishad, a text that says, just as in a tree, there may be two birds. One is enjoying the fruits, jumping from branch to branch, enjoying the fruits of the tree. And another bird in the same tree is simply witnessing the movements of that first bird. So similarly, yoga means stop, pause, in the enjoying the fruits of the activities of this body and turn our attention to that other bird, to that the witness bird or the supreme soul, Paramatma, that's within the heart of every living being, within our heart and within the heart of every living being. So that's the recommendation of the Vedas, not only Bhagavad Gita, here specifically in the Upanishads. Recognize these that higher consciousness that is witnessing all of our activities and become conscious of Krishna. So these are teachings found in Bhagavad Gita, and do we have copies for people that don't have copies? Not today.
Okay.
Next week, we'll bring some copies. So if you don't have a copy, we'll make you a gift of Bhagavad Gita. And you can begin very early. Right, Radha? You can begin reading Bhagavad Gita even as a child. And if you do, you know, for whatever stage it begins, but if that is something that is imbibes within you, then it stays with you. At whatever the position. So as you mentioned, I started practicing, exploring Bhagavad Gita's message when I was in college, and I've been living with this message for a good number of years now, and it's kind of like osmosis. It's just part of my being. And I can share with you. You, by receiving this message and bringing it inside, the world outside doesn't necessarily change, but how you experience the world outside, how you experience life changes. It's a whole different experience of bhakti yoga, experience of connecting your consciousness with the Supreme, like a spark that goes away from the fire and brings the spark back into the vicinity of the fire, and the glowing potential of the spark becomes restored. Higher consciousness comes about just by that very simple act. That's the meaning of yoga, as you heard at the beginning. That's the beyond good health kind of yoga, but the Bhagavad Gita's message teaches. So we're done. What's our time frame? What kind of time frame?
We can go until 9 for question okay. Answer.
Any discussion?
9:15.
Comments?
How did Buddha come before Buddha?
Say it again?
You said when Siddhartha was in the West Gate, he saw a Buddhist monk.
Yeah.
So I got confused what you mean by that.
Okay.
Because Siddhartha becomes Buddha later on.
But he became enlightened. So let's do this. You know Sanskrit. You know the meaning of bodhi. Bodhi means spiritual intelligence. And one who becomes filled with bodhi becomes Buddha. That's what the term means. One becomes enlightened. The teaching of Buddha is to become enlightened. So he became enlightened. So then he accepted or took on the title of Buddha. But before him, before this Siddhartha, before this person, prince, was born in Nepal, according to Srimad Bhagavatam and other parts of the Vedic literatures, Adi Buddha, making a distinction between Adi Buddha and Gautama Buddha, appeared 2,600 years after Krishna appeared. And this Siddhartha appeared after that. So there's an avatar, you know the meaning, avatar of one who descends. An avatar of Krishna was Buddha. Some time passed, and then Siddhartha was born. He became enlightened. He became also Buddha. I mean, the teaching is become a Buddha. Not exactly become God, become enlightened. Fixed in Buddha, become an enlightened one. Does that help? Because I visit China, I took the time to find out there are different varieties of Buddhism. And then another, in mainland China, the most popular form of Buddhism is Pure Land Buddhism that's propagated by Amitabha Buddha, another Buddha. And his teaching is, by compassion, he created a place that's stopping down on the way to Nirvana called Sukhavati. Anyway, there's different Buddhas. This Siddhartha that I showed you the picture of, or a painting of, is not the incarnation of Krishna. It's a different person who became enlightened, but popularized some teachings, the old system. Okay. Chronology is different, the geography is different, the person is different. Yes?
In the nearby city, Somerville, they have the active, what they call Somerville Cable Access Television. It's an award winner like Cambridge's, where volunteers have, in this case, taken the stories of what you're talking about, different countries and ages of enlightened ones. When there was one collection in 2003 that came to Northeastern universities and went around the world, and it was the stupas, and it had the relics in it, the bones, the pearl-like bones, only with maybe a short paragraph on card. However, a person that was not Buddhist, but he found that he wanted to volunteers, time to volunteer the camera work. So that is part of the Somerville Cambridge Access loaning to citizens. And I believe they have a copy of that, because the two women that were the people to travel around the 50 places around the world with these 12 stupas elaborated on the stories of each, including one that kind of shocked me was, it was a ruler that was a really vicious ruler. He was responsible for many, many deaths. But in his lifetime, he became realized. I don't remember which country, whatever. But it was quite an experience for me to just be an usher there for 7 hours that first night. I was there for a whole week. And that video is on a CD or DVD. It should be at some adult table.
Anyone else? Amongst the students especially.
Wait,
let me see if they have the students contribute something. Okay. If you're very contented or something. Yeah.
I don't have a doubt, but I would like to say something.
Okay, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
I really like your thoughts about a healthy life. I am a student, and now I have a very hectic, a very stressful life. But the key points which I will remember for sure is to have a good sleep.
Yeah.
And eat well.
And one of the best ways to help good sleep is going to bed every two nights. Do you do that? Most students say, make to bed, make to rest. Right? Which
no,
one are you?
Actually, I sleep early and wake up early, but these days, because of the studies, my schedule has changed.
Okay. Well, it'll help restful. This science says and wisdom says. I can get into a little bit more. I'll get a little bit more. A little bit more. Something that may help. You're familiar with the Bhagavad Gita's concept of modes of nature? Goodness, passion, ignorance. So, the early morning hours are goodness hours. They're conducive for any kind of consciousness elevating activity, spiritual activity in particular, but even consciousness elevating activity. And then, and this is from the early morning as the sun begins to rise, and then as the sun becomes full, then passion begins to enter, the mode of passion. And then, activity intensifies and busy, and then as the sun sets, it starts to move into more influence of the mode of ignorance, and then at nightfall, mode of ignorance, and then those early morning hours. But the best time for rest is during those night hours, and the best time for consciousness elevating, invigorating your whole system, even do some kind of sadhana, spiritual practice of some kind, whatever your kind is. And after doing that, try, if you're not already doing it, then do your studies, and you'll find the studies will go so much better because your mind is so much clearer and so less cluttered and so less stressed that in a fraction of the time, less time than it would normally take you, certainly less time if you stay up late trying to do something. You just zoom. And you feel better. And then if you need a little more rest, you take a little more rest, and then you go through the day. Try it. Invite me. And if you already have some kind of a spiritual practice, fine, do it regularly. And in addition, or if you don't, this mantra meditation that we did at the beginning, in fact, that's our last slide again, is ideal. Thank you. Invite you. Yes.
So I just wanted to add that I used to have real problems getting to bed. It would take me like 2 hours to get to sleep.
Uh-huh.
And back then I was getting to bed at like 3 or 4. Now I get to bed at 10 every night.
Yeah.
And the difference is literally night and day.
Figuratively and literally.
Yes. And I also wanted to add that one of the things that helped me the most with getting to sleep quickly is I will meditate on my back in my bed for 20 minutes every night.
Uh-huh.
Once I exit the meditation, it seems like I can just go to bed like that. But I was wondering, from your perspective, in the pursuit of the higher path, what the pros and cons are of meditating during the night.
Well, in one sense, whatever works. And another is, if your thoughts are in a better space or more peaceful when you take rest, your thoughts when you wake up will also. I mean, for practitioners of bhakti yoga, something that's ideal, that always, I don't always do it, but ideal is you hear some spiritual sound vibration and hear messages of transcendence just before you take rest. Like, in our case, we read Krishna book. It's a description of Krishna's activities and pastimes, and very sublime, very transcendent. Radha, do you do that at night before you take rest? Hear Krishna book? So, and parents often keep their children like that. So when they wake up, or when we wake up, mind goes to those things. You're feeling energized already. So, those are the two answers. No harm. And another way of being able to rest at night is you get up early in the morning. Because then your body is... And just like this thing with eating, you know, make changes in your diet modestly, you know, a little bit at a time, not rather than radically. So same with your resting habits. If you, by maintaining like this, try, like as I was encouraging her, take rest a little earlier and get up a little earlier. Same about whatever the body requires in terms of sleep, then, you know, then do that for a bunch and then keep moving it. Not, you know, forever, but just keep moving it so that, you know, that early, those early morning hours, if you, once you start doing like this, you'll understand what I'm saying. They're very special. They're like a minute then is worth an hour later. It's very, very productive, invigorating, energizing time. Mode of goodness time. There's a phrase in Sanskrit, Brahma Muhurta. Again, those of you from India, you'll know that term. About an hour and a half before the sun rises is ideal time for any spiritual activity of any kind. Again, a consciousness elevated. So, those are some thoughts on both health and good rest and beyond good health.
Thank you.
You know something else? No, you're happy. Okay. All right. So, you have something? Yes.
So you talked about different kinds of exercise, like yoga and other general exercise.
Yes.
Which one is more beneficial, like general exercise or yoga? And what time of the day do you recommend doing exercise? Is there a specific time?
Well, commonly, again, in from my experience as well as interacting with people from the health industry, my experience, a very mode of goodness exercise is yoga. It's ideal. It's also very easy. You don't have to go somewhere and jump in a pool or go somewhere and get on one of those machines or something. It's just right there in your... So it's easy to do, easy to begin, easy to end. You regulate. You can modify what you do depending upon, you know, needs of the body and the time of the year and so many things. If you have a good teacher, especially. So that's mode of goodness exercise. It's gentle, it doesn't get too, not too extreme. And you do it and it helps maintain. And as you know the science of it, it can cure illnesses. It can prevent illnesses and you keep your healthy that way too. So that's ideal. And if, you know, if you're comfortable with the ideal, then you don't even need the alternatives to the ideal. Just do that. Except what it doesn't do is the aerobic thing. So, you know, but find a good yoga teacher and they'll help you figure out the aerobic thing that might suit you. You know, that's like running in place or something like that. Or brisk walking. You don't have to go to class. Brisk walk instead of slow walk. Yeah. Is that your question?
Yeah. The second part was, what do you think the best time is?
Time. Do you have some kind of meditation or sadhana that you do? The best time is that... Just after that Brahma Muhurta hour, just as the sun is rising and just beyond the sunrise, that's ideal. And ideal is before that, you do some I'm writing mantra meditation. There's the mantra. And then, that's ideal. And if it's not then, you know, it's in sequence, the meditation part, mantra meditation part, and then the yoga exercise. You do that on a regular basis, and your mood, the energy that you feel, it's a very sustainable, energizing combination, and consciousness elevating also. So, at the time, ideal, before the sun rises, and then after the sun rises, the physical. Everybody's happy, you're hungry.
And one more question.
Okay.
You're promoting vegetarian diet, right?
Yeah. So, Bhagavad Gita.
What's your take on genetically modified vegetables?
My take on it is, it's really hard to follow it. Because, in America, because so much, I mean, avoid it, genetically modified, but it's so, you know, Monsanto has, you know, got the market so wrapped up, it's tough. I know people that try, I mean, you know, they even grow their own food, so that way they know what they're getting, because you don't know what you're getting otherwise. Generally, it's genetically modified. There's certain parts of the world that are way ahead of America in, you know, banning GMOs. Anyway, I would certainly recommend avoiding it. It's hard to.
So if you have to pick one of two, one is genetically modified vegetarian diet, and another is organic non-vegetarian diet. Which would you?
No question. and for many reasons, you know, it's organic, non-vegetarian. My goodness, you know. Oh, my leg, huh? Yes.
Can we include egg?
Okay. We don't take meat, fish, or eggs because they're not offerable to Krishna. There's protein. You can, you know, measure. Scientists say protein, but we don't. And, you know, somebody might want. You want to know why? And you're just like, you're happy that okay, I don't take that. Okay, I'll give an answer that I heard a woman, devotee, give this answer. What's generally, eggs are not fertilized. So similarly, women, excuse me for saying like this, women also have menstrual periods. And we don't eat that. Well, you could analyze it in the lab, and maybe it's got protein, but we don't eat it. Yeah. So that's what an egg is. It's a chicken's menstruation. We don't offer that to Krishna. Whatever the protein content is, you know, however it may taste to the tongue, we don't eat it. We don't offer it to Krishna, so we don't eat it. Now, if one is just looking at food value, maybe there's food value. That was what this woman said. I hadn't heard that before. there are indications within the Vedas of what can be offered to Vishnu or Krishna. That's not one of the items, so we don't offer it. But there's an explanation of why we don't offer it. Sorry.
What's Krishna vegetarian concern? Like when person
Yes. Yes. Okay, I think we're going to end. Questions are getting out there.